Last time when we met, we talked some about what are known as the five pillars of Islam. Those are the things you do. They're the actions. We said Islam is very much like Judaism. Islam is about actions, about works, those kinds of things. Not so much about belief. Works always take precedence over belief within the teachings of Islam. Other than the basic shahada, the confession, everything else, works take precedence over those. Now, when we start looking, though, beyond the five pillars and start looking at the foundations for those, that is, their religious beliefs, which lead them, among other things, Ed, with your question initially, lead them to believe that the whole world has to come to these beliefs. The whole world either comes to the beliefs or else they're infidels and they are to perish. And if they don't perish in this life, when judgment comes, they will perish with all kinds of tortures, etc.
In other words, if they don't go to America once in a lifetime, they still be scaled, still be balanced. That's just another one of them.
If they, that depends on whether they, as far as a trip to Mecca or not once in a lifetime, that depends on whether they got to an age or a health where they couldn't, and they couldn't afford to pay somebody to go on their behalf. But if they can pay somebody to go on their behalf, then it's still counted as making the Hajj, the pilgrimage.
The reason I ask that question, I say all the people, the United States citizens that convert to Muslim, Muhammad, I feel like
to Islam?
They would still be expected to make the same trip to Mecca as anybody
else. If you convert to Islam, you are expected, one of those five pillars is the Hajj to Mecca once in your life.
So in other words, we'd be about as good as just saying Muslims couldn't come here to make sure anybody converts couldn't go back over that way.
Sarah wants you to repeat that. Goes both ways, right? Cuss both ways. But well, you never can tell. Some folks might do that. But you're expected to make that Hajj or pay someone to make it on your behalf if you get to the point where you can't. And as I said, I don't know if that's why Johnny Quest's little friend in the cartoon was named Haji or not, but whether he'd made the trip, but I don't think so. But now, when we start looking then at those basic beliefs, though, they're doctrines, they're dogmas. You know, a dogma is not a puppy's mom, but a dogma is a belief that you must hold to in order to be part of the group, or else you can't be. It's an absolute. Muslim and Muslim scholar A.A. Galwash writes, and I quote, "The Orthodox Muslim concept of God may be summed up as follows. God is one. He has no partners. He is singular without any like him. He is uniform, having no contrary. He is separate, having no equal. He is ancient, having no first. He is ever existing without termination, perpetual and constant with neither interruption nor ending, ever qualified with the attributes of supreme greatness, nor is he bound to be determined by lapses of ages or times. He is both the Alpha and the Omega, the manifest and the hidden. He alone is what is real." End of quote. And in all of that statement, there is a swipe, in case you didn't pick it up, there is a swipe at Christians who say Jesus is part of the Godhead, who is one and yet three, but three and yet one. So, the first of the basic beliefs is that you must believe in Allah alone. There is no other. He is unique. And Allah alone. Well, within Judaism, in whom do you believe? Yahweh. You believe in God. And God is what? The Shema says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God." Well, we say the Lord is one. But actually, the Hebrew reads, "The Lord our God, the Lord alone."
What's the word Elohim come from? Me from my religious training. What, is that
It is a word for God. It is used by, in certain writings by a particular school of writers, the Elohist. It's Elohim, and it's not only the plural form, and when it's used to speak of other gods, it speaks of multiplicities of God, but it's also used to speak of God in his royal attributes, and the royal plural. Just like when the Queen speaks and the Queen of England says, "We believe," but she's just talking about her belief. It's the royal plural. She's speaking for the whole. And so Elohim, which is used in a number of places, El is the oldest name for God, and it gives you this wizened figure with a long flowing white beard and robes and all this kind of stuff, the ancient one. Elohim is either God in the royal plural, or when it's used of the gods of other nations, it's multiple gods. Then you've got El Shaddai, which means God the Mighty One, or God of the mountains, which is the way that Abraham was first introduced to God. Then you've got the patriarchal names, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the portability of God. God moves around wherever they are and their descendants, instead of being tied to one locale. And then you've got Yahweh. I am who I am. I will be what I will be. I am what I am. Yet, when Christians in Syria pray to God, they speak Arabic. So they actually use, and this is where sometimes confusion comes in, they actually use the name Allah, because that's the Arabic name for God. It means the God. But within Islam, the primary belief, the primary doctrine upon which all others rest is a belief in Allah, and He is God alone. There is no other. But once again, that's very similar to in the Shema, which predates this, in the Shema in Judaism, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord alone." That is, there is no other. Yes?
How do they tie all this back into creation?
They go back and say that when they talk about Jesus, they say, yes, Jesus was born of a virgin, that's miraculous, but Jesus was born of flesh. Adam's creation was even more unique because God took the time to make him as an individual from the dust of the earth in creation, and that Adam was the first Muslim.
Allah was God. How he wasn't there then. How did that happen? I don't understand how they get to, he's God, if he...
He's God, and he's God, and he created all. And while Judaism started out with the proper teaching, over time translation and interpretation corrupted it. And so then Jesus had to come and teach and correct the things that the people of Moses had corrupted and misinterpreted over time. And then Muhammad has to come to correct how people misinterpreted and misrepresented what Jesus taught, which was to correct what Moses taught, which was to correct what was there before that had been corrupted by people.
No.
Wow, that's it becomes a circular argument, really. But they will say that when Jesus repeats the Shema. Muslims will argue that when Jesus repeats the Shema, when he's asked, what's the greatest commandment? He says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is likened to it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." When he says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one," that Jesus is saying that he is not God, he is not part of the Godhead, there is only one God, and they say that Jesus was saying that was Allah. And so that's their argument. There is only one. And that one, as powerful as he is, he cannot become something else that is a human. That's like the old argument. You ever come along, have anybody say, well, if God's really all powerful, can God make a rock that got so big that God can't pick it up?
Can God make somebody more powerful than he is?
Right. So, you know.
He
can't tell a lie, can't outdo himself.
He is the
right.
He can always undo anything.
God cannot go against what God himself decrees as the ultimate. So there is one God, Allah, and God alone. You must believe in angels. There are three uncreated entities in the world. Allah, the mother of the book, that is the spirit that created the book, which is Allah. And then what's really interesting is they say angels are not created, and yet later they talk about angels as being created beings to do the will of God. Oh, I wonder all the time. Oh, I wonder all the time, you know, and I get that question. Where, you know, but God is other, which means that God is not part of creation or locked into time as we do. God is other. But where did God come from? God is.
I am that I am.
Yeah. God, you know, when he said Yahweh, it means I am who I am. I am what I am, and I will be what I will be. In other words, God always is. There's not a past for God. God always is. And always has been, always is, always will be. God says, I'm Alpha and Omega. God's always been. God is outside the solar system. God is not locked into our time or our space or our... although I will tell you that... I won't tell you who, but somebody last year was telling me that there is a... And they showed me the article that there's a place somewhere out there in space where scientists say that time does not function in the same way that it functions here. And since time doesn't function out there the same way that it functions here, perhaps those are the outer limits of heaven.
Well, it's, you know, it says God created the heavens and all 7 days and all that, but if you're standing on the sun, how are you going to know when 7 days is the earth rotating to get the 7 days
for right. Well, see, we're trying to understand and explain. Human beings are trying to understand and explain God and creation and the infinite in finite terms.
So,
well, see, and the writer, we try to make formulas out of those kinds of things. The writers themselves were not trying to make a formula. The writers were trying to say that God is so infinite and so much above where we are and what we understand that we can't, you know, really understand all of that. And so it'd be like we think the day's dragging on. For God, 1,000 years is like that with a day.
Well, you've got to have some way to relate. It's
right.
Like heaven is paved with streets of gold. So what?
No, well,
right.
For us, we don't. Once again, we're not dealing with the same time frame. You know, God's not locked into our time frame.
Would you think when you entered Gate 7 that you would know the answer to them calculations would come from?
And there are people that say if you don't hold a 6 24-hour periods, then you're a heretic. But see, I have no problem if the earth's millions of years old, because what the writer was trying to say was not that. The writer was trying to say that God started and ended something before he moved on to something else. That there's order.
I still say we're recycled. This planet was somewhere else a million years ago. No, no. Destroyed it and started over again.
So... Yeah, and in all of that, though, as I said before, we've each got two angels. We've each got two angels. Now, while Gabriel and Michael are the primary angels, we all have two angels. And they're not guardian angels, they're recording angels. Remember, we said last week, they're recording angels. One of them records your good deeds, one of them records your bad deeds.
I got to get rid of one of them. Be careful which one to do.
Yeah. A third belief, you must believe in Satan as a fallen angel who was present at Adam's creation and who created a grave sin by defying God. And that's why he was cast out. He's also known in the Quran both as Satan, sometimes Shaitan, and sometimes Iblis. Iblis.
Did Muhammad make all this up, or did some council meet one time?
Muhammad had a series of visions and dreams. And this is the recitation that came from those visions and dreams over a 20-plus year period. And as we said before, abrogation comes into play, so things that were revealed later, if they contradict something that was revealed earlier, they supersede what was the earlier revelation.
But you said Muhammad could not read or write.
Yeah, Muhammad was illiterate. He couldn't read or write, and as he recited these things, people sometimes were so impressed that they would jot them down on things. Some of the scholars, after Muhammad died, they finally started, wait a minute, we need to gather this stuff up. And so they went all over the place. You got anything that Muhammad said that you wrote down, anything anybody wrote down, anything anybody remembers? And some of it was written, as we said before, they wrote some stuff on palm leaves, on pieces of wood, on the scapula of animals, leather, all that kind of stuff.
And so,
well, some of those things are. Now, what's the opening surah actually should be around 96 out of the 140. But it's an opening prayer, and so it's put up there. Everything else is just, I mean, it's not in chronological order at all. Surah 9, which was given the sword chapter about killing infidels and beheading them and all that kind of stuff, wasn't given until the year before he died. And yet it's way up there near the front, because it's longest to shortest again, except for that opening one. Satan was present at Adam's creation. God commanded all the angels to bow down to this created one, that is, to Adam, this man that he created. However, in Surah 38... starting in verse 71. Your Lord said to the angels, I'm about to create a human being out of clay, and when I have formed him fully and breathed my spirit into him, prostrate yourselves before him. Therefore the angels prostrated themselves, all of them together, but not Satan, who was too proud. He became one of those who deny the truth. God said, Satan, what prevented you from prostrating yourself to what I created with my own hands? Were you overcome by arrogance, or are you of those who think only of themselves as exalted? Satan replied, I am better than him. You created me from fire and the jinn, from which genie comes, are beings created by God out of fire. You created me from fire. You created him from clay. So he wouldn't bow down. He was too proud. And so God said, begone, you're accursed. My curse will remain upon you till the judgment day. So here, people were created out of clay. Satan refused to bow down because he is a fire being. And therefore, that's why he was kicked out. So there are jinn in the world, J-I-N-N, not juniper berries. Well, what's really interesting is, Jerry, and that's a very good question, man, you have made him a little less than the angels. That's some of the Hebrew texts. There are some Hebrew texts which say you have made him a little less than gods. So you get, and that's part of where the Mormons get this idea. You too can become a god somewhere out there. So it made us, made humans a little less than gods. But some of the Hebrew texts say, for you have made man a little lower than the angels. The jinn are created by God from smokeless fire. They're highly intelligent. They have great power. And they do all kinds of things, some good and some not so good in the world. And they influence people one way or the other. So you're recording angels, not only writing that down, they're also writing down if a jinn comes to you and gets you to go one way or the other, they record that action as well and which jinn did it. But that's where the idea, jinn is the etymology for genie. Not I dream of, but, you know, the genie in the bottle and has the magical powers and granting wishes and all those kinds of things. And so there was ways with genies, people believed that there had to be ways to control the genies. And so you get, you know, you trap them in different ways, including in lamps and bottles and all other kinds of things. And then they had to do your bidding. And when you, in our depictions of whether it's cartoons or whether it was genie, on I Dream of Jeannie or whatever else. When you open the bottle or you rub the lamp, what comes out of it before it turns into a genie?
Smoke.
Smoke. Smoke. Coming from the fire. But you are required to believe that these beings are out here. In fact, it wasn't just within Judaism and even some branches of Christianity, but even within Islam, there was a belief that all this space is filled with spirits, good and bad spirits. All this space between us is filled with good and bad spirits. And so, you know, we were constantly being tugged back and forth. And so there's good and there's bad. By the way, I mean, we say it's filled with atoms, but you can't, just want you to know, you cannot trust atoms. A-T-O-M-S. Huh. Well, they make up everything. Yeah. But, so the first is a belief in Allah alone. Secondly, in angels, and that they're present, and we have recording angels with us, and they can. The third, that Satan was too proud to bow down to us, and therefore he defied God and God's direct order for all the angels to bow down to human beings, and therefore was kicked out. And part of his war then, and the jinn that he leads, war against humanity, is because he's so upset that God chose poor little us over him and his kind. I guess that green-eyed monster lived a long time ago, right? The fourth belief that you must hold is believe in the holy books. And the holiest of the books is the recitation. The recitation, which is what Quran means. Recitation. The holy book, the Quran, the hadith, the teachings of Muhammad, while not on the same level as Quran, are pretty close. And those are the ways that Muhammad, you know, Quran didn't, and even Muhammad later said Quran didn't cover every area of life specifically. Therefore, there were teachings that he was given about how to handle other areas of life. And so those were collected as well. There's another document that's not on the same level and is not at the same level as some other religious doctrine or documents like the Torah of Moses, the Psalms of David, and the teachings of Jesus. But there's something called the Sunnah, which records important events or actions by Muhammad in his life. And so they're to emulate those kinds of actions as well, which I guess when they're attacking caravans, regardless of convoys going through, yeah. Remember, we said that Muhammad said it was okay to attack caravans, especially the caravans run by his family who had dissed him, to attack caravans and to take the money and to kill the people if they didn't convert in order to raise your army and have funds to do these kinds of things.
Is your copy of the Quran in English?
Yes. I do not know Arabic. Okay. Nor do I have any desire to learn Arabic. Hebrew was bad enough and they're kin. If you are, according to traditional Islam and traditional imams, if you are truly Muslim, you will learn to read it in Arabic. They would say, even though they pass these out to people, this particular copy I was given by an imam at a meeting. They're supposed to read it in Arabic as well. All prayers must be in Arabic. I was given this copy of the Quran by an imam. A number of us were given these copies in English so that we could read it and come to know the truth of Islam.
Well, now, all these people in America that convert to that.
Right.
Do you think they know how to read that?
No. This is an English version, but we as Americans, if you convert... if you convert and you don't learn, you're still inferior. You're a Muslim, but you're still inferior until you learn that. And you'll always be inferior until you learn it in Arabic. And part of the reason that I have this and that I've read a good part of it I've actually read the other translation I have of it more than this particular one. This one modernizes a few of the words, I guess, because they're trying to reach younger people. To know what other religions believe, what to teach, and what the basis is, so that I can then judge and do that kind of thing. That's the same reason I used to have people that would look, and I had students that would come into my office and they'd be looking at my books, might be on the phone or something, and they'd go, oh! Because someone gave me a copy, and I read it, of a document written by Anton Sandor LaVey. Anyone know who Anton Sandor LaVey was?
Sounds French.
LaVey, in California, started the first Church of Satan, and he wrote what was known as the Satanic Bible. And someone had given me a copy of that. And so I read it, especially where he twists around the Ten Commandments and twists the Beatitudes to other things. So that then I could say, and I have students, every now and then I'll have a student wanting to do their world religions paper on Satanism. I had one that did that about 4 years ago. He was the son of an Episcopalian rector. Episcopalian priest. Well, and Wicca, which is not exactly is not the same as a fast growing nature religion. There are Wiccans all over the upstate of South Carolina.
Yes,
in fact, out on Highway 29, there is a section before you get to Spartanburg. You know, the next 2 miles is kept clean by so and so, and the sign says, you know, the next 2 miles by the Wiccans. So. But in addition to Quran and the Hadith, Muslims are encouraged to read the Pentateuch of Moses, and as we've said before, to abide by the teachings except where they conflict with Islam. In other words, just not to believe that it was Isaac that was going to be sacrificed, and it's Isaac that's the son of the covenant. It's Ishmael that was going to be sacrificed, and it's Ishmael that was the son of the covenant. But the other stuff you do, you hold on to. The Psalms of David and the Evangel or the teachings of Jesus. Except any place that Christians have corrupted the text and claimed that Jesus said he was Messiah or Son of Man, you're not to believe those parts. In fact, while Islam acknowledges Jews and Christians as people of the book, a lot of Jewish and Christian belief and a lot of Jews and Christians are summarily dismissed as inferior because we haven't come to this. They will say that the original Hebrew text and the original Greek text of the New Testament were indeed given by Allah to Moses and to Jesus, but then when they were translated or when they were interpreted by other people, they hate Paul. They hate Paul. They say that Paul is a... They say Paul is the one that corrupted the true religion that Jesus was trying to bring people back to, which was Islam. That it got corrupted and doesn't really reflect those teachings any longer. A fifth, the day of judgment or day of reckoning. At death, the body goes into the ground to decay. The spirit or the soul goes into soul sleep. Of course, then again, when I was growing up, what was I told happened when you died? Your soul went into soul sleep. One time wondered if that meant you got on the soul train and got your little, but soul sleep. But that's how people, you know, when we translate and Paul's using a euphemism of those who have fallen asleep in 1 Thessalonians, it's obviously it's soul sleep. When you go to sleep and sleep all night and you wake up, you don't know how much time's passed. And so they say it's just like that. Well, when in Islam, the teaching of the Quran is that there will be a day of judgment, a day of reckoning. When you die, the body returns to dust. The soul goes into an unconscious state like soul sleep. At judgment, Allah will call forth all the dead and the alive for judgment. And as I mentioned briefly last week, as judgment is being passed down, you want to be toward the back of the line, not the front of the line, because while you're waiting for your turn, you get to try and rectify or make right with people that you've wronged. You know, so if your draft number comes up, mine was 62 and it came up. If your draft number comes up, you hope that it's way down the line and not number one or two when it comes time for judgment, because then you don't have an opportunity. But you'll have an opportunity to rectify those kinds of things with your tormentors. After final judgment is passed, everyone walks across a narrow bridge to their final destination. If you are going to paradise, that bridge and that path is very easy and very smooth, and you get to go right into paradise. If your final destination is hell, it is very rocky, it is very steep, it has twisted vines and roots all over the place to trip you up so that you have a difficult time getting there. Exactly the opposite of when Jesus says, when you're asking, seeking, and knocking, and he says, take the narrow way, which is hard, for broad and easy is the way that leads to destruction. So here they're saying, once this happens, though, the evil will stumble and fall into hell. Paradise is filled with sensual delights, culinary treats. Wonder if they have an Italian cream cake. No. Fine clothes made of silk. Free-flowing drink. Quran says it is the wine that does not intoxicate.
See, that all this is relating to earthy things.
Well, but then again, the streets of gold.
I mean, you know, Jesus even says you're not going to be married in heaven. What's going to know the widow who had seven
husbands? Yeah, well, he's talking to the Sadducees. He's been either given marriage nor get married there.
Yeah. You're not going to have a family.
But when we start talking about streets of gold and the crystal sea and jewels set in the walls, those earthly things are things that at the time the book of Revelation was written, those persons who were under persecution by the Romans and in particular by Domitian didn't have. And so the writer's trying to say, look, imagine heaven being filled with the most precious metals and jewels and everything else you can, and it's going to be even greater than that.
I think the key word is indescriptible.
Right. Right. And once again, we're trying to give people the carrot. We're trying to give them, maybe it's C-A-R-A-T. We're trying to give them the carrot instead of the stick to encourage them. And that's kind of, you know, here. Sensual delights, culinary treats, fine clothes of silk, flowing wine that does not intoxicate, fountains of honey, groves of grand fruits, and a place with huris, H-O-U-R-I-S, beautiful virgins that attend to the needs of men. Surah 44 and Surah 56 both talk about the huris that are there to satisfy the needs of men. Hell has seven entrances and seven different levels. Torments are commensurate with the life you lived on earth. Kind of like Dante's Inferno. Yeah. You know, you read Dante's Inferno and the different rings and the different levels and all the different things there. The unrepentant and idolaters wear clothes made out of pitch. And they're hanging out near fire and they're wearing clothes made out of pitch. And as we said before, they drink, they only have boiling water and pus to drink. Pus. In hell. In hell. For example, in Surah 23, 102 and 103. Those whose scales weigh heavy with good works will be successful. Those whose scales weigh light will have ruined their souls in hell will they abide. The fire will scorch their faces, and they will abide therein with their faces distorted. In Surah 34. And so, you know, these things are used to encourage folks. Surah 37. The chosen servants of God shall have known provision, fruits of various kinds, and they shall be honored in the gardens of bliss, seated on couches facing one another. A drink will be passed round among them from a flowing spring, white and delicious to those who drink it, causing no headiness or intoxication. With them will be spouses, modest of gaze and beautiful of eye, like closely guarded pearls. They will turn to one another with questions. One of them will say, I had a friend who used to ask, do you really believe that after we die and become dust and bones, we shall be brought to judgment? Then he will say, shall we look for him? And he will look and see him in the midst of the fire. And he will say, by God himself, you almost brought me to ruin. And talking about those in hell, we have made as a test for the wrongdoers, it is a tree, the Zakum tree. It is a tree that springs out of the bottom of hellfire, and its fruits are like devil's heads. They will eat from it and fill their bellies with it. Then in addition to it, they shall have a draft of boiling water to drink. Then surely they shall return and stay in hell. In addition, you know, I could read some more of these surahs, but in addition, in Surah 4:56, we shall send those who reject our revelations to the fire. When their skins are burnt up, we shall replace them with new ones so that they may continue to taste the punishment forever, for God is mighty and wise. Well, they do. They do talk a lot about hell, trying to scare people out of it, but also trying to encourage those who are believers not to do certain things so they don't go there, etc. And they use that to try and... But then again, sinners in the hands of an angry God.
But that's not typical.
No, it's not. Well...
Right.
No, and it's... Right. No, we shouldn't come out of fear. But what happens is, unfortunately, Susan, you're right. The New Testament doesn't teach that. It warns that if we reject God too long, what will happen? But it keeps calling us back to love and grace, love and grace, love and grace. Yet I have known and I knew of preachers when I was growing up. Friends of mine, the pastor at our church didn't do this. But I had friends that went to Baptist churches that were, they were scared to death. The preachers seemed his primary goal was to scare them out of hell. And, and they heard more hellfire and brimstone kinds of sermons than they ever heard love and grace. And, but this book itself, though, the Quran, pushes that. Not, the biblical text doesn't, but this does. Yes, there is. Yes.
When you see their actions and activities, you don't get reports on the good you're doing. You get reports on...
Right. Predominantly the bad. Occasionally things do pop up, but that's Sunnis and that's certain groups, not others. You also, number six, must believe in all the prophets. There are 124,000. But the greatest five are Abraham, Moses, David, Jesus, and Muhammad. And Muhammad is the final one and the greatest. Also, there is a strong belief in predestination. While many, or I would say most Muslims, are predestinarian, the early creed was what reaches you could not possibly have missed you, and what misses you could not possibly have reached you, because it all comes from Allah. So everything's pretty much very deterministic. And then the eighth is in heaven and hell, and the ninth is Sharia, which means road or path. And Sharia is a very strict, literal strict interpretation of Quran as law. Well, like some within some Calvinistic traditions. There were those who said, well, there's no need to evangelize at all because the predestined, the elect will come to us. But then there are others who argued, well, but how do we know that the way they come, they were predestined is, how do we know that it's not by us telling them about it? So you've got some of both of that within there. And I don't want to belabor or go too long. We're going to talk about women in Islam. Well, if, for example, in Surah 2, 282, believers, let's see. Believers, when you contract a debt for a stated term, put it down in writing. Have a scribe write it down with fairness between you. No scribe should refuse to write. Let him write as God has taught him. Let the debtor dictate and let him fear God his Lord and not diminish the debt at all. If the debtor is weak in mind or body or unable to dictate, then in fairness let his guardian dictate for him. Call in two of your men as witnesses. But if two men cannot be found, then call one man and two women out of those you approve of as witnesses, so that if one of the two women should forget, the other can remind her. In other words, the testimony of a woman in court is worth half that of a man. So in order to get a full testimony, you have to have two women where there's a man.
If you get those 72 virgins, where is he going to be?
30.
The odds would really be against him. It would be 36.
Could be. But we also find that, the hijab and the burqa were initially seen as ways to keep men from looking with lust upon another man's wife.
Well, they didn't have very high opinions of men either.
No.
They thought that they had to drape the women.
Well, see, Muhammad did a lot of caravan business, and he demanded his wife be covered up because there would be men in his house, and he didn't want his wife. In fact, Quran says not to let your wife show her delights to any other man other than her husband. Quran was given, according to Islamic tradition, according to Muhammad, over 22 years, he was given the recitation that is now in Quran by Allah himself and the angel Gabriel. But no one ever witnessed, he was always in trances or dreams or having visions off by himself when these happened. Yeah. Well, but yes, Quran's created later. However, the Imam who was speaking that gave us these things said that Adam himself had a copy of Quran.
How did he do that?
That's what I
like.
So, you know, it's
500 years after
you.
600.
There are. There are.
And I really think, and I know we're running a little long here, but I really think that part of the draw is things in the world can be so chaotic that people want to have, that's the appeal of cults. That's the appeal of extremely strict religious persons, regardless of whether it's in Orthodox Judaism or fundamentalist Christianity or wherever else. They want somebody to do the thinking for them and to tell them, here it is, this is it, and if you do this, then God's going to take care of you if you don't go to either side or the other. And yet, you know, like, right, tunnel vision. So, and like we, yeah, but like we sometimes do, you know, there will be individuals who will kind of skirt the edges. As I've said to you before, Tom said he had a colleague who served in Saudi Arabia and said that, you know, some of the limousines that pull up the officers' club at night some of the Saudi men, wealthy guys, would come in and sit down. Well, according to this, you don't drink. According to this and the teachings of Muhammad, public drunkenness is a capital offense crime. But the Quran does say, let not the first drop of alcohol touch your lips. And they would stick their, he said they'd stick the finger in it and say, Quran and Muhammad say, and they'd do like that and throw the first drop on the floor, and then they'd drink their drink. So, you know, it's, and yet, it's the second largest religion in the world. It's the fastest growing religion in the world. But I do think that people, it's very strict, very rules oriented, and because there's so much chaos in the world, I do think there are people, when they feel lost and rejected by others and they can't get straight answers from somebody else, they do this. It's kind of like the Catholic priest that I sat next to during a rehearsal dinner when he and I were doing, 30 years ago, we're doing a Catholic Methodist wedding. And the Methodists happened to be a friend of Mary's, and so I had done some counseling, and he had done some counseling with them. I tried to counsel him. No. We were sitting there and talking and found out he's the only member of his family that's not a Southern Baptist. Oh, wow. And he was raised Southern Baptist. And I, so, of course, I had to, well, then why did you go this way? Just out of curiosity. And he said, well, this was his primary reason. He said, well, I got to where I wasn't satisfied with the answers I was getting from my preacher or any other Baptist preacher around. And so I got to the point to where I believed that somewhere, in order for me to truly live my life and to remain sane and grounded, that when no one else understood, there was, God had designated one person in the world who could give all of the answers that I needed. And that's the Pope. And that's why he became a Catholic priest. So, you know, there's, I think there are people who are looking for those kinds of things. And that, I'm being, well, I'll go ahead and say it, because I was going to say that wasn't nice. I was going to say I'm being dead serious about David Koresh and some of these others.
Yes, sir.
That's the appeal. Jim Jones, David Koresh, these others, with people who feel that they haven't gotten answers or they haven't been treated the way they wanted to be treated. And here this person says, come here, we'll give you all of this, we'll tell you how to live, we'll tell you how you're going to get there. We'll guarantee that if you do these things and live by these rules, you're going to make it. Well, the interesting thing is that the leader is always the higher one.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is, in most of those instances, the leader becomes a God figure for the people who come. And you know, it's just, but it is a very influential kind of thing. And religion and politics influence us in so many different ways. That's why people, it's so difficult sometimes to talk about religion and politics and not just at garden parties. Right.
People look for David Koresh as a first and modern. Yeah.
Well, and David Koresh said he was Messiah.
Yeah.
Come back.
There's a difference, in my opinion, of David Koresh and those people who say, if you don't agree with us, we'll kill ourselves.
Right.
You know, we'll blow ourselves up. Oh. And someone right. said, if you don't agree with us, we're going to kill you.
We're going to kill you. Well,
that's what I have a problem with the Muslims.
Right.
If you want to offer Kool-Aid with Jim Jones, that's your business.
Right.
If you want to all blow yourself up at Waco, Texas,
well,
if you start coming after Christians,
right.
and saying, I'm going to kill you if you don't believe me,
right.
that's where I think the tension is that we don't
well,
talk
is.
About in politics.
It is.
Everybody says we have freedom of religion. I think if your religion also grants the freedom to the other religions,
yes,
like we do with Baptists,
right.
we say you can worship and we can worship.
Right.
But when you start having as your ultimate goal to annihilate everyone who doesn't think the way you do.
And see, Muhammad, once again... Well, once again, Muhammad and all of this, Susan, was at the point where, you know, he said, you know, God wanted all people to live in unity. But then when he was rejected primarily by not only his family, but that group of Jews that at first liked him in Medina. And then they said, no, you're not the final revelation. And no, you're not giving something that corrects Judaism. And he kicked out two of the tribes and then murdered the other tribe and sold the men and sold their women and children off into slavery. You know, I think at that point he decided, that's when he kind of said, okay, this is it. And that's when he actually began to divide the world into House of Islam, that is anybody who was a Muslim, and the house of war, anybody who wasn't, and war could be waged upon them until they give in. And so whether you talk about peace, trying to peacefully argue, as some Muslims try to, that's their goal, is not to kill you. They want to peacefully argue you in, well, to argue you into it. Or whether you believe or I'm going to kill you, the ultimate goal is that the entire world will become Muslim.
Right.
Or else.
No.
Right. No tolerance of anything else.
Now, some of that takes place in the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
That we believe.
Right, it does.
In Joshua, where they went in the promised land and the Lord told them to kill all these people.
Which they never did, but yeah.
Yeah.
They only killed some. They didn't kill them all. But they, yeah. I know some of that does happen, and the question, and that once again was given primarily in their understanding, because God said, "Don't intermarry with the people of the land, because you'll go after their gods instead of bringing them after me."
But in the New Testament, you know, we're just one of some people. If they don't agree with you, you dust your feet
right
off, you dust your hands off, and you move on.
I agree with
right
that. Most of the Orthodox religions just come from the Old Testament for the sake of losing
the Bible. But I will go back, just jump one thing back. Ultimately, Koresh and his followers did die in the fire, etc. However, they were gathering weapons to someday move forward and convert other folks.
That's why explosion was called the weapon for
yeah
side of
it. Yeah.
And, you know, but you think of the others like Jim Jones.
Right.
And who was the one that they all were going to follow Halley's comment?
The Hale-Bopp comment,
yeah,
folks. They do. So.
To the place where it doesn't make sense even to those who follow the leader.
Well, and I have actually had, and according to some reports that I hear every now and then, it's almost choir time, there are more Muslims becoming converts, getting interested in becoming converts to Christianity than ever before, and that creates even more of a mindset. You converted from us. You left the true religion, so you deserve to be killed. Like the guy whose sister, two or three years ago, saw an interview. He was in Chicago looking for his sister. He was from a predominantly Muslim area in Africa, and she had converted. She had run off, gotten married to, I think it was a Jew, not a Christian, but she converted from Islam to another religion, and he was there to hunt her down, to take her back so that she could be put to death according to Sharia law by the family. And he said, "I will hunt her until I find her and take her back, and we will kill her, because she has blasphemed against Allah." So, you know, it's... Yes?
When it comes down to the nitty-gritty of life as a Christian, I think of Paul sometimes when he said, before he was converted, that it's a grace and unto faith. So if you use those two standards
right
for your ability to know what's right and wrong, like the angels, right and wrong,
mm-hmm,
we can't depend on that at all.
No.
We can't even depend on angels.
No.
So when you get down to the nitty-gritty of just everyday Christian life, even the churches you can't depend on.
Well, it's...
Because
I know.
Even in the churches, you have men, their minds are thinking evil thoughts. Let's face it.
Yeah, we are fallen humanity. We do, right, we do think evil thoughts.
The nitty-gritty of, we're all evil, basically.
Yeah. But... Right.
And Paul says, look, I'm ignorant.
Yes, sir.
It's my unbelief, it's my ignorance that caused me to persecute these Christians. I mean, God,
yeah,
think about that.
Oh, he did.
He was
and
smart.
Yet.
He
was smart, but that also, that ignorance and not knowing is gives us more and more of a challenge that we have to know and then try to live it.
We can't always know through man.
No. Right.
Praise God, yes, sir.
That's the basic command.
Yes, sir.
Even the Syrian Christians,
right,
that have converted to Christianity, how in the world did they do it?
Well, and see, the conversion, Ariel, the conversions that I'm hearing about, too, start in a lot of those with a lot of those Muslims that are being converted to Christianity, get interested in being converted to Christianity, it starts with dreams. They dream about Esau. Esau is only mentioned by name 11 times, although he's mentioned 97 times in other ways. But Esau is the Arabic name for Jesus. And they're having dreams, and they're dreaming of Esau, who then challenges them to seek someone out. And so dreams are extremely important. It's dreams and visions that gave Muhammad the recitation. Therefore, dreams and visions are very important within Islam.
Yeah, but how important is it if you don't know if they're really dreams?
Well, you don't, but they're thinking that they are. And so, but that gets them to start talking to people who are Christian and studying and trying to figure out what's going on, and then they become converts. The dream isn't how they become Christian, but that's one step in getting them to the point where they become Christian.
So.
But that, you know, it's very important. Just like dreams and visions were very important in Judaism. So.
And in New Testament,
yes.
Joseph and Mary.
Right, Joseph, Mary, and on you go.
Yeah.
Well, thank y'all. God bless you. Go in peace. Maybe we'll try and wrap this up next time.